All right, good morning, everyone. So today's daf is Baba Kama Daf Lamed Hey. We were holding on Daf Lamed Dal and Amabez at the Mishnah. The daf today is basically going to have two Mishnayas. The first Mishnah talks about cases where you might be obligated, but if your ox were to do the same thing, you would not be obligated. Or the opposite, if your ox were to do something, the ox would be obligated, but you would not be responsible if you were to do the same. And the Gemara is basically going to try to come up with a case that would actually be parallel, where we'd be dealing with almost the exact same case with the ox and a person, and the dinim would actually be different, that the ox would be chayav the person pater, or the person would be chayav and the ox pater. And the second Mishnah is basically just going to deal with a case where an ox became injured, and we're not sure exactly how the ox became injured. Maybe it was there were two shvarim, two oxen of a single person, and we're just not sure which ox it was that gored this ox or that injured this ox. Or alternatively, maybe we'll have two different oxen of two different people, and we're not sure whose ox it was that is responsible. So the Mishnah and the Gemara are going to clarify how we explain that and how we determine who's responsible and who's not. So beginning with the Mishnah and Daf Lamed Daled Amud Beis, the Mishnah says, Yesh chayav al maisa shoro upater al maisa atzmo, pater al maisa shoro v'chayav al maisa atzmo. There could be a case where a person is obligated, is responsible for the action of his ox, but pater for his own action. And there could be a case where a person is pater, is exempt for the action of his ox, but obligated, responsible, chayav, on his own action. So says the Mishnah, Ketzad, how could you have such a case? Shoro should be esh pater, v'hu should be esh chayav. If a person's ox embarrasses somebody, it damages and would, in theory, be responsible to pay boshes, that person is going to be exempt. They will not be responsible for the embarrassment caused by their ox, because when it comes to embarrassment, we assume the limud is from the pasuk ish ba'amito, that a person hurts his friend, and we darshan velo shor ba'amito. So you're not going to be responsible if it's your ox that damaged your friend. So if a person's ox were to embarrass, you would be pater, but who should be ish chayev? But if you embarrass somebody, you're going to be responsible to pay boshes, to pay fees for embarrassment. Similarly, shoro shasimet ein avdo behipil achino pater. If a person's ox blinds his slave's eye or knocks out his slave's tooth, a person would be pater for that, because generally we assume an eved goes free if they were to lose their eye or their eye were to become blind, or if they were to lose their tooth. But if a person's ox is the one responsible for that damage, then you would be pater. Vehu shasimet ein avdo behipil achino chayev. But if you were the one who blinded your slave's eye, or you were the one who knocked out your slave's tooth, then you would be responsible. So two cases where the shor is going to be exempt, but you're going to be responsible for doing the same exact thing. Now, on the flip side, the Mishnah says there are cases where your ox is responsible, but you would not be responsible. So for example, shoro shechavo ba'aviv imo chayav, if your ox were to damage your father or your mother, you would be responsible, the ox would be responsible, and you'd have to pay because of the ox. But if you were to damage, if you were to injure your mother or your father, you would be pater. So why is it that you would be pater? We have explicit psukim parshas mishpatim that tell us that you're not allowed to injure your father or mother. So the explanation is that you're supposed to die for injuring your mother or your father. And so when the Mishnah tells us that if you injure your mother or your father, you're pater, the reason is you're pater for the damages, you're pater for the payment of the injury that you caused, because we have a principle that kam lebe deraba mine, that a person only receives the more extreme, the more stringent punishment, and they would be pater for any less severe punishments. So in this case, you should be obligated to die because you hurt your father or your mother. You should also be obligated to pay because you injure them. Kam lo b'din rabbi mina, you're only going to be responsible to die. You're only going to be chayav the death penalty, but you're not going to be chayav to pay in this case. So this is a case where we're actually more strict, we're more stringent when it comes to your ox. Your ox would be obligated for hitting your mother or your father for injuring them, but you would be pater because you're going to lose your life. And similarly, shoro shehidik et agadish b'shabes chayav, if your ox lights a haystack, lights a pile of grain on Shabbos, you would be chayav, you would be responsible for those damages. V'hu shehidik et agadish b'shabes pater, but if you were to light up a haystack on Shabbos, you would be pater. Why? Mipnei shehum is chayav b'nafsho. Because you're obligated to die, you're obligated to lose your life for violating Shabbos. Here, I guess we're assuming, in theory, we'll have to see how it plays out in the Gemara, but we'd be assuming that you are going to receive the death penalty. So you had Edim and Esra, you had witnesses who can testify that you violated this Isser Shabbos, that you lit up this haystack, and also that they warned you not to, and you nonetheless did it. So if you're going to be obligated to lose your life, then you're going to be pater, for the monetary payments associated with this action because of the principle of kam lebi derabbi mineh. So four cases in the Mishnah, two in which your shor is chayev and you're not, and two in which you would be chayev and your shor would not. So says the Gemara, Tani Rabbi Avohu kami derabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Avohu taught in front of Rabbi Yochanan that kol ha-mekalkalin peturin chutz mechovel umavir. We have a principle in Hilchos Shabbos that if somebody does something destructive, somebody does something that's mekalkel, that is not something that you're obligated for. When it comes to Shabbos, we need you to do something constructive, something creative. You need to do a tikkun, you need to do meleches machsheves. That's what the Torah prohibits. But if you were to do something that damages, that's inherently destructive, you'd be pater. Except for two examples. Except for chovel, if you injure a person and you cause, you know, a blemish to develop, you cause, let's say, like a bruise to develop, or mavir, if you light a fire on Shabbos. Those are two actions which are inherently destructive. They're inherently mekalkalin, and nonetheless, we assume that you're going to be chayiv. The Mishnah tells us that havara, that lighting a fire on Shabbos, is prohibited, is one of the 39 malachos on Shabbos. And chovel, depending on the context, is likely a tolda, is an example of mefarek, which is a tolda of dash, that causing blood to come out of a person would be like extracting, let's say, a juice from a fruit or something like that. Would be like schita, and you'd violate that. Potentially, also, you could be chayiv for the malacha of tzoveya, if you cause like a bruise to develop and it dyes a person's skin in a certain way. That could also be chayiv. But so Rabbi Avohu is telling us that the klal we have in Hilchos Shabbos is that anything destructive is going to be pater, except for two exceptions, chovel and mavir, injuring something or lighting something on fire.
So deliberate or not deliberate, it doesn't make a difference.
No, so deliberate or not deliberate should still make a difference, meaning, let's say we're talking about kavana. So in general, in Shabbos, we have a principle that davar she'ena miskaven. We paskin like Rabbi Shimon, that davar she'ena miskaven is mutter legamre. So if we're talking about with kavana or without kavana, that's going to make a difference. If we're talking about shogeg versus mezid, that's also going to make a difference in terms of the punishment. But let's assume full kavana, exactly what the punishment's going to be. But if you have full kavana, even though this is a destructive act, you're still going to be chayav because its essence is that it's destructive. And nonetheless, we know that the Torah prohibits it, so you're going to be chayav even for such a mekalka. That's at least the position of Rabbi Avohu. But Amar Leh, Rabbi Yochanan responds to Rabbi Avohu, and Rabbi Avohu makes this statement and says, Puktani Levara, take your statement outside. Go teach that statement in the basement, outside of the base medrash, because what you're saying is actually incorrect. Chovel umavir ain't a mishnah. There's no question that when it comes to chovel umavir, even when it comes to injuring somebody or lighting something on fire, you're not going to be chayev because it's mekalka. Ve'im timtzi lomar mishnah, and if you want to suggest that you actually would be obligated for injuring or for lighting something on fire on Shabbos, chovel b'tzarech lekalbo, mavir b'tzarech la'afara. The only cases in which you're going to be chayev for injuring somebody or for lighting something on fire would be if you actually need the result of that action, which would make it no longer mekalkel, but it would actually make it constructive. What are the examples that the Gemara brings? Chovel b'tzarech lekalbo. Let's say you injure somebody, but you need to actually use the blood, or you need to use the spot of the injury for your dog. You're going to feed them something, some result that comes out of this injury. You're going to use it in some constructive way. So then you'd actually be chayiv, because that would basically make it no longer a mekalkel. And mavir b'tzarech la'afaro, if you light something on fire, but you need to use the ashes that emerge from whatever it is that you burn, so even though lighting something on fire is inherently destructive, here you're clearly doing it for a constructive purpose. You're doing it in order to benefit from the byproduct, I guess, or the result of this action. And thus, you might be chayav on such an action. It sounds like Rabbi Yochanan doesn't think that you'd be chayav, right? Because he told us that chovel umavir ain't a mishnah, that you're never going to be obligated for injuring or for lighting something on fire. Ve'im timtzi lomar mishnah, if you want to say that you'd be obligated, then you'd only be obligated in these two cases. But it sounds like maybe Rabbi Yochanan doesn't even think you'd be obligated in these two cases. But nonetheless, he's working to find a takana, a constructive aspect to these malachos, which might make you obligated. So the Gemara now quotes from the Mishnah that we just saw. And it's going to try to use this Mishnah as a kasha on Rabbi Avohu, I believe. Tnan, says the Gemara. Shor shehidlik et agadish b'shabes chayav, v'hu shehidlik et agadish b'shabes pater. Rather, it's going to be using it as a kashan Rabbi Yochanan. That the Mishnah told us that an ox that lights a haystack on Shabbos is going to be obligated. And if you light a haystack on Shabbos, you're going to be pater. And we saw in the Mishnah that that's because you're going to be obligated for your life. You're going to be obligated to the death penalty. And therefore, you're going to be exempt from the monetary payments. And says the Gemara, v'katani hu dumya deshorah. The Mishnah states that you are basically comparable to your ox, meaning we know that you have a different punishment, a different din than your ox. In this case, your ox is going to be obligated and you're going to be exempt. But we're assuming that we're talking about a parallel case, that the same case in which your ox is obligated is a case in which you're pater. Ma shoro delo kabayile, af hunami delo kabayile. Just like the case of your ox is assumed to be a case where the ox doesn't need to benefit from the result of lighting up this haystack, because we assume an ox doesn't necessarily have such a high level of understanding of kavana, he can't be lighting up this haystack in order to benefit from the ashes that emerge from it. So you must also not need the byproduct, the result of this action. Bekatani pater mipneishu nidan benafsho. And nonetheless, we say that you're putter in this case, that you don't have to pay monetary payments because you're nidon benafsho, because you're obligated the death penalty for your violation of Shabbos. So that seems to pose an issue, Akasha, to Rabbi Yochanan, who had said that you're only going to be chayav on mavir, you're only going to be chayav on lighting something on fire if you need the result, you need the byproduct of that action, because the Mishnah seems to indicate that even if you don't need the byproduct, the result of that action, like your shor, who also doesn't need the result of that action, then nonetheless you'd be obligated in Shabbos, and you'd be putter from the monetary payments because you're chayav for Hilchos Shabbos. So that seems to pose a strong question, a strong kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. But answers Rabbi Yochanan to this kasha, lo, you totally misunderstood. Shoro dumya didei. You thought that the case must be that a person, the person's action is parallel to the ox's action, rather, is parallel to your action. But really, right now, where the Gemara is assuming that the ox's action is similar to your action. Mahu de kabayile. Afshoro de kabayule. Just like you need the byproduct, you need the result of your action of lighting up this haystack, so too the ox needs the byproduct, needs the result of lighting up this haystack. So we had started by making this akasha on Rabbi Yochanan and saying your ox clearly doesn't need the result, so you clearly must not need the result, and therefore it's destructive and nonetheless you're obligated. But now Rabbi Yochanan is flipping it on its head and it's saying that your ox is similar to you. Just like you need the byproduct, you need the result of the action, your ox also needs the byproduct, needs the result of the action. And therefore, the case of Havara in the Mishnah, the case of lighting something up on fire in the Mishnah, is actually a constructive case. It's not Makalka, but it's Metakin, and that's why the Mishnah assumes that you're obligated for your life, and therefore you're putter from the monetary payments, and thus this doesn't pose a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan. So then asking Gemara the obvious question, Shoro Heichem Mishkachasla, how could you ever have a case where the ox wants the byproduct, the result of this action? It doesn't have Kavana, there's no way that it's going to light a haystack in order to benefit from the results of the haystack. So Amar Le Rav Avya, Rav Avya answers, Hacha b'mayaskinan, what's the case that we're dealing with of an ox that needs the byproduct, the result of his action of lighting up the haystack? B'shor pikeach, she'altalo neshicha begabo. We're dealing with a very smart ox that has a certain injury, a certain wound, a certain bite on its back. B'kabay le'mekalye, v'ignedar b'kutma. And the ox wants to burn the haystack, and it wants to roll around in the ashes of the haystack to use that in a therapeutic way, in a medicinal way, to solve the injury, to solve the bite on its back. So you could actually have a case where an ox is lighting a haystack, is setting the haystack on fire in order to benefit from the ashes of the haystack. And thus, we can assume that shoro dumya didei, that the ox wants the result of his action just like you do. And thus, when the Mishnah said that you were chayav, that was only because it was a havara which was mataki, not a havara which was mekalka. And ask the Gemara, uminoya dinan, how could we ever know that the ox actually intended to benefit from the ashes of this haystack? Meaning, even if they light up a haystack, how could we possibly know that the ox had kavana to do that? Maybe the ox is not such a wise ox. It didn't have any benefit, any intent to use the ashes of the haystack. But nonetheless, it went ahead and lit it on fire. So answers the Gemara, Dilavatar dekalye kamigander bekutma. If you see that after the ox lights the haystack on fire, it goes and it rolls around in the ashes of the haystack, then you know that the reason that it lit the haystack on fire was in order to benefit from the ashes. So ask the Gemara, Miika ki agavna, could such a thing really even happen? This whole thing is crazy. We made a suggestion as to how an ox could actually need the benefit of his action, how he could need the byproduct of lighting on fire. And we suggested how you could know that the ox intended for that purpose. But the Gemara says, would that even happen? So Ann says, the Gemara, in. Yeah, it actually could happen. There was an ox in the house of Rapapa who had a certain toothache. It had an injury in its mouth. Rashi says that chinche refers to the teeth. I believe the Aruch, I saw quoted that the Aruch says it's referring to a different part of the palate, a different part of the mouth, but not the teeth. But nonetheless, you see that this ox had an injury in its mouth. And ayel upatke l'niziyasa v'shati shikra v'itzi. It went to Rav Papa, somewhere in Rav Papa's house, and it found a nice flask, a nice pitcher of beer, and it knocked off the opening. It opened up the flask, and it drank the beer, and it became healthy. So clearly you see that if an ox has some sort of injury, it may do some action in order to benefit in some medicinal way. We're illustrating that through the ox that had a toothache and ended up opening the flask of beer in order to drink it and be healed. But thus, it's also not crazy to assume that an ox might set fire to a haystack and roll around in the ashes in order to benefit from the ashes and heal an injury on his back. So thus, Rav Yochanan has escaped this kasha from the Mishnah. The Mishnah, which seemed to indicate that you'd be obligated for Havara, even in a case of Mekalkel, even in a destructive way, was really only talking about a case that was constructive, and thus it fits with Rav Yochanan. So Amar Rabbanan Kami de Rav Papa, Mimatid Amar Shoro Dum Yadidei, V'akatani Shoro Shabiyesh Pater, V'hu Shabiyesh Chayev. Rabbi Yochanan rejecting the kasha was all predicated on assuming that the ox was similar to you, that just like you need the end result, you need the byproduct of your action, so too the ox needs the byproduct of the action. But the Rabbanan, the rabbis, ask in front of Rav Papa, and they say, can you really say that the ox, in all the cases in the Mishnah, are similar to the person? The Mishnah says that if your ox embarrasses someone, you'd be pater. But if you embarrass someone, then you'd be chayav. And shoro dumya didei niskavein levayesh heichi mishkachasla. We assume that a person is only going to be obligated for embarrassing somebody if they're niskavein levayesh, if they have intent to embarrass the other person. And so if the ox is going to be pater, and in a parallel case you're going to be chayav, if the ox is comparable to the person, just like the person needs kavana levayish, needs to have intent to embarrass, we assume the ox would need to have kavana to embarrass. They would need to have intent to embarrass the person, and nonetheless, they'd be pater. So how could you ever have a case where an ox is niskavein levayish? How could you ever have a case where an ox has intent to embarrass, and therefore the ox is parallel to the person? So answers in Gemara, mishkachas kigon sheniskavein lahazik. Da'amar mar, niskavein lahazik, af al pi shelo niskavein levayish. You could have a case where the ox is putter for embarrassing somebody, that's parallel to a case where you would be obligated for embarrassing somebody, if the case is that the ox has intent, has kavana, to damage the other person. Because we assume, this is Gemara's quoting from slightly earlier, we had seen that you could be obligated for embarrassing somebody even if you don't have intent to embarrass the person, as long as you have intent to damage the person. And niskavin the hazik, afa pishalon niskavin the bayish, you have intent to damage even though you don't have intent to embarrass, that's also obligated, that such a person would also be obligated to pay the fees for embarrassment. So even though we assume your ox can never have intent to embarrass a person, we definitely assume that an ox could have intent to damage a person. And if intent to damage a person would be enough to make you chayav, that's a parallel case in which we can know that the ox would be putter. And thus, throughout the Mishnah, it's not insane to assume that the ox is parallel to you, because by embarrassment, we see that just like you would have kavana to damage but not to embarrass, so too the ox would have kavana to damage but not to embarrass. And then in the case of the fire, it follows also that just like you would need the byproduct, you would need the result of your action of lighting the haystack on fire, so too the ox would need the result of that action as well. So that's essentially the first approach to the question on Rabbi Yochanan from the Mishnah. But Rava now is going to suggest a different approach. Rava Amar, Masnisin Bishokeg. Really, we could answer that the Mishnah is talking about a case where you don't need the ashes. You don't need the result of the action of setting something on fire. And nonetheless, you're still going to be putter from the monetary payments because you're going to be obligated for Shabbos. However, uchtetana de bechizkia. Tana de bechizkia, maka adam u maka behema. Ma maka behema lo chilakta ba ben shogi bemezi bemiskavin de shem miskavin bederch yirida lederch aliyah lepotra moment el chayva moment. So we just chewed off a lot, but let's keep going and we'll go back to explain. Af ma'ke adam lo tachlok bo bein shogeg lemezid bein miskavin nishein miskavin bein derech yirid lo derech aliyah v'chaivo mamon el potroma. Rabbi says, really our Mishnah could be dealing with a case of shogeg. The Mishnah could be dealing with a case where you don't need the byproduct. You don't need the result of lighting the haystack on fire. And you'd be putter from payment, not because you're obligated to die, not because you're chayav misa for lighting the haystack on fire, but because of the principle of Tana de Bechizkiya. Because Tana de Bechizkiya tells us that ma'ke adam u'ma'ke behema. The Torah tells us about two different things. That a person who injures a person is responsible, and a person who injures an animal is also responsible. But when it comes to an animal, to the one who injures an animal, we assume that ma'ma'ke behema, lo chilakta ba bin shogig bin mizid. When it comes to injuring an animal, there's no difference between whether you do that action with intent or accidentally. There's no difference bin miskavin l'sheinu miskavin, whether you have explicit kavana or you don't. Bin derech yirida l'derech aliyah, or whether you strike the animal by raising up your arm and doing something in an upward motion, or by lowering your arm and doing something in a downward motion. L'potro mamon el chayvo mamon. We don't make a difference between any of these six cases in order to exempt you from payment. Rather, we always obligate you in payment. So there's no difference between any of these cases. Af ma'ke adam lo tachlok bo bein shogeg lemezid bein miskavin l'shein miskavin. So too, when it comes to somebody who injures a person, we assume that you shouldn't make any difference between whether you do that without intent or with intent, whether you do it with explicit kavana or without kavana, bein derech yirida l'derech aliyah, whether you do it in an upwards motion or in a downwards motion, l'chayvo mamon el potro mamon. We don't make any difference in any of these six cases in order to obligate you, to make you responsible to pay money. We always say that you're going to be exempt from monetary payment. So what does this Tana de Chizkiya have to do with anything? I thought we were talking about lighting something on fire, and now Tana de Chizkiya comes out of nowhere and starts talking about a person injuring an animal and a person injuring a person. So the principle that emerges from Tana de Chizkiya, the reason that you're always going to be potter mimamun, you're never going to have to pay in a case of injuring a person, is that we always apply kamlim b'derabamine. Because somebody who injures another person would be obligated to pay the death penalty, we assume there's going to be kamla b'mideraviminei. They're not going to be obligated in any monetary payments because they're obligated in the more serious punishment of misa. But Tana Vechizkiya tells us that that's going to be true not just when a person is actually obligated to die because they did something b'mezid, but even if they would have been obligated to die if they did it in a mezid fashion. Here, even if they're only doing it b'shogeg, nonetheless, they're going to be pater mimamon. So even if we're not actually applying the death penalty, and we can't really apply kamla minerabamineh, nonetheless, a person would be pater because this is something that in theory could have led to the death penalty, and thus you won't be obligated any monetary payment. So when the Mishnah says that you're not obligated to pay money for damaging the haystack by lighting it on fire, because you're obligated to die since you lit the haystack on fire on Shabbos, we don't have to be assuming that you're actually responsible for lighting the haystack and you're actually going to be put to death, because you could have even done it b'shogeg, but nonetheless, based on Tana de Bechizkiya, you'd be putter from monetary payment even if you did it b'shogeg, even if you're not actually going to die in such a case. And therefore, by Hilchos Shabbos, you're also going to be putter, and seemingly the Mishnah would not pose a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan, because it's not actually telling you that you're obligated for this lighting of the haystack on fire, because it would be mekalkel, since in this case you did a b'shogeg anyway. So the ask the Gemara, Amalei Rabbanan the Rabba, mi matzita mokum la b'shogeg? The Rabbanan asked Rabba, can you really establish the Mishnah as talking about a case where you did something b'shogeg and therefore you're not really obligated the death penalty? The Mishnah said explicitly that the reason that you're patur for monetary payment is because you're going to be judged for your life. You're going to be obligated the death penalty. So how could you say the Mishnah is talking about a case of shogeg? The Mishnah said explicitly that you're going to be obligated to die. It must be that it was b'mezid. So answers Rava, hachi kamar. Kevan de b'mezid nidon b'nafsho. V'hechi dami de kaboy la'afaro hashta b'shogeg patur. When the Mishnah says that you're potter for monetary payment because you're obligated to die, you're obligated to lose your life, this is what it meant. Since you would be obligated to lose your life if you were to violate this prohibition, b'mezid, and what's the case where you'd be obligated to lose your life, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that havara is mekalkel, that it's destructive, and you wouldn't be obligated to lose your life. The case would be if you actually need the ashes, you actually need the dirt, and you're going to use it in some constructive way. So because you could have been obligated had you done this b'mezid, if it was metaken, hashta b'shogeg pater. Now, even though you did this action, even though you lit the haystack on fire b'shogeg, nonetheless, you're going to be pater from the monetary payment. And so Rava basically rereads the Mishnah in a perfect way to fit with Tana de Vechizkiya. Because again, Tana de Vechizkiya's whole principle was that Kamala bin Rabbeinai doesn't only apply when you do something b'mezid and you're actually obligated to death penalty. It applies even b'shogeg, because if you had done it b'mezid, you would have incurred the death penalty.
According to the Vechizkiya, why don't you say you did it b'mezid but you didn't need the ashes?
If you did it b'mezid but you didn't need the ashes, so that was basically... if you did it b'mezid, but you don't need the ashes, then why would the Mishnah say that you're putter from the monetary payment, according to Rabbi Elkanah?
No, you're putter from Misa, right?
Yeah, you're putter from Misa. So it would be great if you were putter from Misa, but the Mishnah seems to be saying you're putter from the monetary payments because you're obligated in Misa, right? So,
but according to Vechizkiya, since there's a, if you do it b'mezid and you need the ashes, you could be chayav for Misa. So in all cases, even if you don't need the ashes, and even if you didn't do it b'mezid, you do it b'shogeg, you're still going to be pater for monetary.
Right.
So that should apply even if you do it b'mezid and you don't need the ashes, according to who is it, Rava?
According to Rabbi Yochanan, you're saying.
According to Rabbi Yochanan,
yeah. Right. Yeah. I guess in theory that should be a possibility. But I guess then if we're going to establish the case as a case of mezid, then it wouldn't necessarily be a clear raya for Rabbi Yochanan that you have to be metaken in order to be obligated for havara, because you could say, no, it's a case where you're actually obligated to the death penalty since you did a mezid, and you actually need the dirt for whatever reason, or you don't even need the dirt, you could still be chayav. So we're specifically working to find a case where everybody would agree that you'd be pater because you did a b'shogeg, and nonetheless, the Mishnah says that you're pater from Tashlumin because you're obligated to the death penalty, or you could have been obligated to the death penalty. But nonetheless, Rabbi Yochanan is able to remove the kasha. Okay, so that takes us now to the next Mishnah. So this Mishnah is, again, just going to discuss cases where we're not really sure which ox or whose ox it was that injured another person's ox. Says the Mishnah, Shor shai rodef achar shor acher. If an ox was chasing after another ox, v'huzak, and the ox that was being chased became injured, the person whose ox was injured tells the other person whose ox was chasing his ox that your ox is the one that injured my ox. And the person whose ox was chasing after the other says, no, that's incorrect. Your ox became injured because it ran into some sort of rock, and it got injured through the rock, but not through my ox. So says the Mishnah, the person who's claiming money, the person in this case whose ox was injured, has to bring the proof. The burden of proof is on him. But until he brings any proof, the other person is exempt from payment. Hayushnayim rodfim achar echad. Ze omer shorcha hizik. Veze omer shorcha hizik. Shneim petur. Let's say there were two oxen that were running after this third ox, and each of the two oxen chasing after the third were owned by a different person. So one person claims that the other guy's ox is the one who injured the third person's ox, and the other person disputes that claim and says, no, it was actually your ox. They're both pater because, again, we don't have clear proof. The person whose ox became injured has to bring the proof, but these two people, both of whom could have been the owner of the shor that injured, nonetheless are pater since there's no clear proof. Im hayu shneim shel ish echad, shneim chayavim. But if both oxen belong to a single person, and the person is not disputing the claim that the ox became injured through one of his oxen, he's just not sure which one. So since he owns both of them, we assume they're both obligated. But nonetheless, if there's a difference between the two oxen, it could actually make a difference which one is going to be obligated, and thus the fact that we don't know is going to be significant. And that's exactly what the Mishnah continues with. Haya echad gadol ve'echad katan. Let's say the two oxen owned by a single person were different in size. One was big and one was small. And Hanizak Omer Gadol Hezik, the person whose ox became injured, says it was your bigger ox that injured my ox. And the reason they would claim that is because that'll give them more money from which to receive payment for the injury of their shor. The Hamazik Omer Lo Ki Elakatan Hezik, But the person whose ox or one of his two oxen for sure damaged says, no, it wasn't the bigger ox that damaged. It was actually the smaller ox that damaged. And that's going to obligate him less because there's less to collect from the smaller ox. Or echad tam ve'echad muad. Let's say one of the oxen wasn't a short tam and one was a short muad. The short tam would only have to pay partial payment, chatzi nezek, but the shor muad, the one that's likely to go, would have to pay full payment. So hanizak omer muad hizik, the person whose ox became injured, says it was the shor muad that damaged my shor, and therefore he's going to be able to collect nezek shalem. V'hamazik omer loki elatam hizik, but the person whose ox damaged says, no, it wasn't my shor muad, it was my shor tam, my shor that's unlikely to gore, that injured your shor. And therefore, I only have to pay chati nezek. So hamotzi mechavero alav harai. We assume the person who's claiming the money, the person in this case whose ox was injured, has to bring the proof that it was the shor muad or the shor gadol that injured. But if he cannot bring that proof, then we assume the damaging party would only have to pay from the lower level responsibility, either from the shor katan, the smaller shor, which has less monetary value from which the person whose shor became injured could collect, or to pay from the shor tam, who would only be obligated to pay chati nezek. Hayu hanizak in shnayim, echad gadol ve'echad katan, ve'hamazik in shnayim, echad gadol ve'echad katan. Let's say there were two oxen that became injured. One of them was big and one of them was small. And there were also two oxen that did the damage, that caused the injury, and one of them was big and one of them was small. And now there's a debate about which ox injured which ox. Hanizak omer gadol hizik et agadol v'katan et akatan. The person whose oxen became damaged says it was your bigger ox that injured my bigger ox, and it was your smaller ox that injured my smaller ox, and therefore I have more to gain, I have more to benefit. Why? Because the bigger ox of mine that got injured is more likely to have more damage. But if I can collect that damage from your bigger ox, which injured it, I'll have more to collect from. Whereas if I were only able to collect it from the smaller ox, I don't stand to recover the full value, the full benefit of the injury that occurred. The hamazik omer lo ki el akatan et agadol v'gadol et akatan. And the mazik says, no, you got it all wrong. It was my smaller ox that injured your bigger ox, and my bigger ox which injured your smaller ox. And that's beneficial for the mazik. Why? Because the bigger ox, which potentially has more injuries, more damages, can now only receive payment from the smaller ox. He stands to recover less of the financial loss that he incurred. Or alternatively, echad tam ve'echad muad. Let's say of the two oxen that potentially injured, one of them was a short tam, was unlikely to go and only has to pay chazi nezek, and one of them is a muad, is likely to go and has to pay nezek shalem. So hanizak omer muad hizik et agadol ve'tam et akatan. The person whose oxen became injured says it was the short muad that injured my bigger shor, and it was the short tam that injured my smaller shor. V'amazik omer lo ki el atam et agadol muad et akatan. But the mazik, the person whose oxen damaged the other person's ox, says, no, you misunderstood. Rather, it was the shor tam, the shor that's unlikely to gore and only has to pay chatzi nezek, which injured your bigger shor. And it was the muad, it was the shor that's likely to gore, which injured your smaller shor. Hamotzi mechavero alav araya, we assume the person who's claiming monetary payment in this case has to bring the proof, but otherwise the mazik, the person who caused the damage, whose oxen caused the damage, would only have to pay from the smaller level of payment, the lower level case, which would obligate him less.
Actually, the Mishnah doesn't say that he's going to pay the lower amount. That's something that you've added.
Hamotzi mechaveiro levaraya.
It says hamotzi mechaveiro levaraya doesn't say he's going to pay the smaller amount.
Right. So you're saying it could mean that he's completely potter.
Yes. See later in the Gemara. And
there's going to be a discussion. I know. I saw you send a voice note about Taino Bechita and Behora Lo Besorin. But the Gemara, we'll see in the Gemara. But the fact that the Gemara says Hamotzi Mechavero Alvaraya and Shakil Kedamar Mazik, right? So we'll have to see it exactly inside. But because the Gemara is using it as a tiyufta against that case of Taino Chitin Rehod Lovisor and Pater, it's assuming that you're going to collect a lower amount, right? But I guess I'm just sort of I'm biased from the continuation of the Gemara, so I'm following the Gemara's assumption that you'd have to pay that amount. But you're right. You could say Hamotzi Mechavero Alvaraya and you wouldn't have to pay anything. I think also, though, the pashtus is like what the Gemara understands. Why? Because when two people have a dispute, seemingly whatever the person admits to, he'd be obligated to pay. And hamotzi mechaveiro olav haraya, when we say you have to bring proof, you only have to bring proof about the incremental amount, the amount that you're disagreeing about. But the amount that you're both in agreement about, then there's no proof to be brought. and that person, in theory, should be obligated to pay that amount.
So if you listen to this 5-minute show, you may change your opinion.
Okay, so I'm going to have to listen to that. I guess I should start listening on the way here, so that way I know what to expect. But okay, I appreciate that. But no, certainly I did add that, but that seems to be the assumption in the Gemara. So says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Zos Ameres Chalukim Alav Chaver Abal Simchus, Amar Mamon Hamuta B'Sofek Chokin. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba says, the Mishnah seems to suggest that his Simchus's friends, the rabbis in the Mishnah, disagree with Simchus, because Simchus says in the beginning of Bava Metzia and in other places that Mamon Hamuta B'Sofek Chokin, that anytime you have a monetary dispute and there's uncertainty about who should pay, about how much should be paid, about what belongs to whom, we assume that you split the payment, you split the money evenly. But our Mishnah says, no, if you have a dispute, then the way we deal with the tzafik and dine mamonos is hamotzi mechavero olav araya, that the one who's claiming money from his friend has to bring proof. So the Mishnah, which says hamotzi mechavero olav araya, seems to disagree with Simchus. So amar le Rabbi Abba bar Mama le Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, amar Simchus afilu bari ubari? Rabbi Abba bar Mama asked Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, says, did Simchus say mamon hamuto b'safik chokin, even in a case of bari ubari? So what's bari ubari? In dine mamonos, we have two terms called bari and shema. Bari is when a person makes a claim that they believe is 100% correct, that they say, I know with full certainty that X. And shema is when a person is not so sure. They say, I'm pretty sure, I think, maybe it's like this, but they're not positive. So there's a question if Simchus actually holds his opinion that that you split money in a monetary dispute when both people, when both parties say that they're confident in their position. And the assumption of the question is that our Mishnah, we'll see this in the Gemara in 1 second, that our Mishnah is a case of bari ubari, where both people are confident about their claims. And nonetheless, the Mishnah says, hamotzi mechavero olav haraya. So that's only going to go against Simchus if Simchus would also say, mamon hamuto b'safik cholken, that you have to split the money in a case of bari ubari. So we're not really sure if that's true. And the Gemara answers, Amar Lei, in Amar Simchus Afilu Bari Ubari. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba answers that Simchus does hold his opinion of Mamon HaMotu B'Safik Cholken, even if both parties are confident in their claim. So ask the Gemara, Mimaymi Demasnisen Bari Ubari. How do I know that the Mishnah, which says Amotzi Mechaveir Al Baraya, is actually dealing with a case where both parties are confident, where it's Bari Ubari? Diktani Ze Omer Shorcha Hizik Beze Omer Loki. It's clear in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says, the person whose ox injured says confidently, your shor injured me. And the person who's disputing that claim at the beginning of the Mishnah says, lo ki elabasela laka. That's not true. Rather, your ox became injured through a rock. It ran into some sort of rock and it became injured that way. So both people are clearly very confident in their claims. The nizak, the person who became injured, saying, your ox definitely gored. And the mazik, the potential person whose ox injured the other ox, is saying, no, that's incorrect. Your ox definitely became injured through a rock. So we see that our Mishnah is bebari ubari. And nonetheless, the Mishnah says, hamotzi mechavero olav haraya, seemingly disagreeing with Simchus. So ask the Gemara, maskiv l'Rav Papa, midereisha bari ubari, seifa nami bari ubari. Rav Papa says, since we just established the beginning of the Mishnah, where the two people have this dispute, whether the ox injured or the ox became injured through the rock, as being a case of bari ubari, then the Seifa, the later part of the Mishnah, presumably also is a case where both parties are confident in their claim. But Ema Seifa, let's examine the Seifa and see what it actually says. Haya echad gadol ve'echad katan. If one ox, again, going back to the case where two oxen belong to one person, and one of them injured, one of them is big and one of them is small, and we're not sure which one injured. So haya echad gadol ve'echad katan, nizak omer gadol hizik, umazik omer lo ki ala katan hizik. If one of the oxen was big and one of them was small, and the nizak, the person whose ox became injured, said it was the bigger ox which injured, but the person whose ox potentially injured said, no, it was the smaller ox who injured, or hizik echa tam ve'echa muad, nizak omer muad hizik, the amazik omer lo ki ela tam hizik, or if one of the oxen was a shor tam, is unlikely to gore, and only has to pay chatzi nezek, and the other ox was a shor muad, is a shor that's likely to gore, and has to pay nezek shalim, and the person whose ox became injured said it was the muad that was mazik, it was the muad that injured. But the person whose ox potentially injured says, no, it was the shor tam who only has to pay chatzi nezek, which injured. Hamotzi mechaveiro olav haray. So then we apply the principle that hamotzi mechaveiro olav haray, the one who's claiming money, has to bring the proof. Halo mighty raya. But if the person whose ox became injured cannot bring any proof, cannot support his claim, then shakil kid amar mazik. he would receive payment according to what the mazik, what the person who damaged his ox, is claiming. So this is what Rudy was alluding to before. Neima tehavi tiyufta de rabba barnatan, da amar taino chitim behodalo besorim pater. This seems to be directly against Rabba Bar Natan, because Rabba Bar Natan has a principle that if a person claims that he lent wheat to a person and the person owes him back wheat, and the person disputes that claim and says, no, I don't owe you wheat, but I owe you barley, we assume that the person is potter. He doesn't even have to pay the payment of the barley, because the person who claimed that he owes him wheat said, you don't owe me any barley, you only owe me wheat. And the person only agreed, only conceded to owing barley, but not to owing wheat. So we assume that such a person would be potter. But our Mishnah doesn't assume that. Our Mishnah, like Rudy pointed out, the way I was adding, or the way I was biased based on the Gemara, assumes hamotzi mechavero olavaraya, that if you have a dispute and the person cannot bring proof for his claim, then you would still have to pay the lower amount that you're agreeing to. The person would only have to bring proof to substantiate and to receive the incremental value, the higher level value that he's claiming from you. So the Mishnah, which says that in a case of bari ubari, you have to pay the lower amount that you're agreeing to, but not the higher amount that the person is claiming from you, and you're not just completely off the hook, seems to go against Rabba Bar Natan. So the Gemara says that can't be. It can't be that we're dealing with a case where the seifa is bibari ubari, because that would be a tiyufta against Rabba Bar Natan. Ela bibari v'shema. It must be that the seifa is a case of bari v'shema, where the person whose ox became injured says, I know for sure that it was either the bigger ox or the shor muad which injured, and the nizak, the mazik, the person whose ox potentially damaged, is only b'shema, only thinks, but isn't positive, that it was either the smaller ox or the shor tam which injured. And I asked the Gemara, deka amar bari man, deka amar shema man. Which party is the party that's bari, that's confident, and which party is the party that's shema, that's not confident? Inema deka amar nizak bari, deka amar mazik shema. If we say that the nizak, the person whose ox became injured, is confident, is bari in his claim that it was the bigger ox or the shor muad which injured, the kamar mazik shema, but the person whose ox damaged is the one who's not sure, he's not really sure if it was really the smaller ox or really the shor tam, akati lema tiavi tiyufta de Rabba Bar Natan. Still this poses a kasha on Rabba Bar Natan, because we're still assuming that you would have to pay the amount that you're agreeing to, and Rabba Bar Natan told us, as we saw, that in a case of taino lo chit and v'hodo lo besorin, that if a person claims wheat and you agree that you have to pay him barley, that you would be completely potter. So it's still a question on Rabba Bar Natan. Rather, we have to re-understand that case. Ela dekamar nizak shema, dekamar mazik bari. The seifa of the Mishnah must be talking about a case where the nizak, the person whose ox was injured, is not so sure exactly how it happened. He's suggesting, he thinks that it was the bigger shor, or the shor muad, which did the damage. But the mazik is bari, the mazik is confident that it was the smaller ox, or it was the shor tam. When we seifa nizak shema umazik bari, reisha nami nizak shema umazik bari. And since the seifa of the Mishnah is a case where the nizak, the person who became injured, is not so confident about his claim, and the person who potentially did the damage is confident about his claim, then the reisha must also be a case where the nizak is shema, where the person whose ox became injured is not so sure, and the person whose ox did the injuring is bari. But we establish the Mishnah as being a case of bari bari. So it says the Gemara, Ba'amar sumchas afilu baha, de itzrech ashma'inan de lo. Does sumchas really hold that mamun hamutal besafek chokin is true, even in a case where the person who's claiming the money, the person who became injured or is due payment, is only shema, is only not so confident in their claim, and the mazik, the person who would be responsible to pay, is bari, is confident that they don't owe whatever value, whatever amount is being suggested by the person who became injured? That's crazy. There's no way that sumchas would be talking about a case of nizak shema umazik bari and still say mamon hamuta basafik chokin, and therefore we can't say that our Mishnah clearly disagrees with Simchas when the Mishnah says Hamotzi Mechaber Olvaraya. So how do we understand these cases? We thought the beginning of the Mishnah was talking about Bari Ubari, but we proved based on the end of the Mishnah that it's talking about Nizak Omer Shema Umazik Omer Bari, that the person who became injured is not so sure, and the person who injured is sure, and nothing seems to fit. So answers the Gemara, lo. Simchas was never talking about a case of Nizak Shema Umazik Bari. It was never talking about a case where the claimant, the person who's claiming money, is not so sure, and the person who would have to pay the money is confident. Rather, Seifa Nizak Shema Umazik Bari, the end of the Mishnah is dealing with the case of Nizak Shema Umazik Bari, but Reisha is Nizak Bari Umazik Shema. The beginning of the Mishnah, where Simchas would actually apply his principle of Mamon Amut B'Safik Cholkin, is dealing with the case where the person claiming money is very confident, and the person who would have to pay the money is not so confident. And that's why Simchas would say Mamon Amut B'Safik Cholkin, that money that's disputed, we would divide evenly, and our Mishnah would say Hamotzi Mechavero Alav Haraya. But ask the Gemara the obvious question, V'alo Dami Reisha L'Seifa. If that's the way we're going to understand the Mishnah, the beginning of the Mishnah is not comparable to the end of the Mishnah. The beginning of the Mishnah we established as Nizak Bari and Mazik Shema, and the end of the Mishnah we established as Nizak Shema u'Mazik Bari. So answers the Gemara, Amri Bari v'Shema, Shema u'Bari, Chadam miltihi, that whether the Nizak is Bari and the Mazik is Shema, or the Nizak is Shema and the Mazik is Bari, is essentially the same thing. But Bari u'Bari, Shema u'Bari, Trei mili ninu. To establish one of the cases in the Mishnah as being Bari U'Bari, where both parties are confident, and one of the cases in the Mishnah as being a case where one party is confident and one party is not, that's Trei Mili Ninu. So the way that we set up the Mishnah is actually perfect, even though it's not completely parallel, because the beginning is Bari and Shema, and the end is Shema and Bari, that's essentially the same thing. Only had we set it up in a different way, where both parties would be Bari U'Bari in one case, and would be Bari and Shema in another case, that would be problematic. So we've established the Mishnah in a way that's clear. Simchas would still say, Mamon Hamota B'Safik Cholken, that you divide money that's disputed, and the Mishnah says, Hamotzi Mechavero Olav Haraya, that the person who's claiming money has to bring the proof, and thus our Mishnah does disagree with Simchas. Okay, we'll stop over here.